This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is almost 5:06. You are with Lynn and Kelvin on the Evening Edition. And first up on Popet Popet, we're talking about languages, specifically dialects. So this comes from an article in The Economist that talks about language barriers between different generations in Singapore. For Chinese Singaporeans, Mandarin is recognized as the official mother tongue. And it's actually a result of a government initiative in the 70s called the Speak Mandarin Campaign. And so this created a singular notion of what it means to be Chinese in Singapore.
So, I mean, when you think about the history of Mandarin as a spoken language, right, it was mainly spoken in northern China. And then after that, of course, it became the official language of China as a whole. But most of Singapore's early Chinese migrants came from the southern provinces, where they speak other dialects like Hokkien. So what you have today is young Mandarin-speaking Singaporeans having a tough time communicating with their grandparents who grew up with other dialects, which I think is something that you would recognize if you yourself are a Chinese speaker or a dialect speaker hanging around a Singaporean food court, you actually start to hear all those different voices kind of melding.
Yeah, and I think in Malaysia, the language barriers between different generations have somewhat more to do with migration. For example, when younger Malay speakers move to the city from states like Kedah or Kelantan, there's a need to conform to more textbook bahasa. And there's also lots of factors for this, right? Like blending in at work or fitting in socially. So when they go back to visit their relatives, they may lose a bit of touch with their dialect.
Yeah, I think there is a question here about when dialects are spoken. Whether for some people it might be a first language, it's just the language that you grew up with, it's what your parents and grandparents speak with you. But then when you go to school, generally I think there is a standardization that happens because you go and everybody speaks Bahasa, everybody speaks English, or everybody speaks Mandarin or Tamil or whatever. You know, and then that's where it's like, well, if I want to fit in, if I want to understand everybody, then I'm just going to swap over. And then dialect slowly becomes something that you only speak at home. And then I think that that might be exacerbated when you start hitting up the chain, right? Like when you start going to college, university, you go on to work. I'm not sure dialects are regarded as a useful language, which is sad. I think a lot of the time, if you think of the term like lingua franca, right? Like it's the language of the market. It's what you need to speak in order to study. It's what you need to speak in order to function in a workplace. Dialects don't always enter that picture because it's usually a smaller section of people who actually speak that language.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, it's not seen as something as useful, perhaps in doing business and trying to get jobs and just, you know, its earning potential isn't there. And I think just looking at it from that perspective isn't necessarily the best way to view dialects, right? Because essentially, between the two dialects and languages that are maybe more more minority circumstances, they usually are value-added skills. And in a sense, they do provide a sort of cultural agility, right? For you to learn from different cultures, for you to appreciate your own one, and also to understand your history. I think when you mentioned there up top about how you can be sort of trace back where these speakers might be coming from. You know, in this case, if you spoke Hokkien, it meant you came from the southern part of China. And I think for some families and if you're trying to figure out your identity in a certain country, if you're a migrant, if you're a part of a migrant community, then you want to figure out where you come from. That's where the value is, right? But I think maybe in the case of Singapore, when you're really trying to push the narrative that you're Singapore, you're Singaporean, you're Singaporean Chinese, so this is what you should and must speak.
I mean, even here in Malaysia, you can kind of discern sometimes where people come from based on what dialect they speak. And I think this extends across the languages. If you think about, I think Malay dialects, you know, then you can sort of identify, for example, Northern dialect, I think is the one that, at least here in the office, because we have a few people who do hail from the Northern part of the country. And if you've heard Dr. George Lee on Fridays, he's very proud of his Kecik Klate. So, you know, that there is that. You also have, for example, if I hear Hakka, which is my father's mother tongue, I tend to assume that you're probably not from KL or your family might be from East Malaysia. So I think there are certain assumptions that get made. And that's why this idea of migration and the fact that dialects can tell you where you come from. Dialects can also be, I think, a very sentimental way of relating to an older generation. Yeah. I believe that now, more often than not, that's how dialects are used because, like you said, in Singapore, there is that standardization. But I think it happens everywhere, truthfully. I mean, in Singapore, maybe they pushed it a little harder than most because they tend to do that. But generally speaking, I think there is a standardization of language that occurs because, you know, everyone's just getting along to go along.
Yeah, and it's easy, right? Mm. So you can let us know your thoughts. How important are dialects to you? And do you find that perhaps with the older generation, you might be struggling just a bit to speak to them because you no longer speak that similar dialect?
Yeah, what's your dialect, actually?
Yeah, I think that's our question. Yes. Mm. Yeah, you can call us 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio.
So as always, in this first bit of the show on Pop It, Pop It, we wanted to know whether people's relatives actually speak in dialects back home. And if there is that, you know, communication struggle that happens, this is what they said.
My family and I speak in Hokkien at home because I only speak Hokkien with them. So at times I tend to forget how to speak certain words in Hokkien. So there'll be a bit like a rusty feeling.
Still, like my grandparent, like, because they're from Perak. So my grandparent and my dad, both of them know how to speak in Perak dialect. But he didn't really teach me that because he's married to a Pakistani, I guess. So it's kind of like irrelevant.
No, zero. Yeah, because you kind of tend to understand people regardless. My grandma would have a bit of a dialect, which would be a bit more Punjabi, Indian kind of thing. But I guess from grandma, it's a bit different because you were brought up with her. But if you talk about, let's say, like friends and stuff like that, I always think that dialects are never an issue. Is just basically just be a bit more, you know, tuned into them and try to just like pick it up. Yeah.
And we also asked if dialects should be preserved.
I think we should definitely. It's part of the Chinese identity and culture. Because lesser and lesser people speak in dialects, especially younger generations. So if, let's say, in future, right, I no longer have my parents to speak dialect with me, I'm not sure if I'll be able to keep speaking it. So that'd be a problem.
If someone wants to preserve their dialect, I think they should, just because in the future, it could be quite interesting to say that you can speak in more than one language, especially I feel like with Kelantanese, Sabahan, Sarawakian dialects, it's like almost completely different from the standard Bahasa Melayu.
In some senses, yes, but also some senses, it's hard to preserve it because people move around too much. The thing that should be more preserved would be the culture and language itself.
Yes, definitely. It's all about your culture and your background, and it is something that should be preserved. If anything, I feel that, you know, the youth these days, there's not enough of that, you know, among the younger crowd. So definitely it's something that should be passed down from, you know, the older generation. And it's nice. It's nice to have, you know, a little dialect to touch base on in regards to your family.
So you too can let us know, you know, what dialect do you speak, if you speak one, and if you do, why is it important to you? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. For now, we're just going to cross over to Dr. Kwang Ching Hei, who's a language consultant. Dr. Kwang, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Could you talk to us about the variety of dialects we might find in Malaysia, particularly as we move from state to state?
I suppose I think there are many dialects of Malay, right? You have all the different states of Malaysia. So you have, I think, about 10 or so, apparently, according to the research, 10 or so Malay dialects. Chinese dialects, you have quite a number, like 6 or 7. Tamil, I suppose you have 4 or 5 or 6. I'm not too sure about the Tamil dialects because you have Telugu, Tamil, you have Gujarati, Hindi, Punjabi, etc. So those are the dialects of the different ethnic groups. And besides that, you have people who are Thais, people who are Indonesians. Yes. So these are some of the dialects that we have in the Malaysian environment.
Right. And I guess, you know, where and when would we be most likely to encounter the use of dialects?
When and where? I think usually when you want to adjust and modify with the participants or the speakers, you want to be part and parcel of the group, you would use dialects, because dialects sort of acclimatize you to their identity. You know, you build up the rapport through dialects. When you speak a language, sometimes people don't understand the language and you actually distance yourself from the speakers. When and where are you? I think it would be usually in less formal functions, maybe shopping, when you're at a social function where you meet people from different ethnic groups. When the Kelantanese people meet, they usually will speak in the Kelantanese dialect. And if I happen to go to a function where there are speakers who cannot speak English that I speak, or Mandarin, I would probably use a dialect that I think they can speak, and that will build up the relationship.
Which dialects in Malaysia are most affected when languages become standardized in the country?
Yes, so the dialects, I think, among the Chinese, the dialect that is most affected, I think, will be the one that is least spoken. So I think Hakka will be one, Fuchao will be the other, whereas Cantonese is widely spoken throughout the world, so it's not going to be very affected much in Malaysia. And Hokkien is also well spoken in Taiwan, so it's not going to be very much affected. But I think currently there's a bit of concern about Penang Hokkien. You know, I think quite a number of people are worried that it would die. I don't really believe that it would die, because there are many speakers of Penang Hokkien, and a lot of people are actually using it to they are reviving the dialect actually, and they have poems, they have storytelling. And I think there's even an online portal where people are actually speaking Penang Hokkien. So I don't think that's very much affected.
And I guess, how have you seen language barriers play out between generations in Malaysian households?
I think that there's no problem with the Malay community. The Malay community is still maintaining the Malay language. I think the problem lies with the Indian community and the Chinese community. For the Indian community, for example, I think a lot of the children are actually using English because it's the international language, as is the language of education. So a lot of, I think, children are unable to communicate with their grandparents or their relatives who are from the motherland, maybe India or another part of the world. If you talk about Chinese, I think that's the part where you lose out on the relationship where you could have built up with the grandparents or the older generations, because when the Chinese, let's say the Chinese community only speak Mandarin and the grandparents don't speak Mandarin, how are they going to communicate with the grandchildren? So if the parents try to inculcate this mother tongue of the parents or the grandparents' language or dialect, it will save a lot of hassle for the future, and you actually get to preserve the culture and the identity of that particular ethnic group, that dialect-speaking group.
And besides enabling Malaysians of different generations to communicate, what would you say is the practical value in preserving dialects?
Practical value? So many values. Your identity, your vocabulary, your food, your costume, your artifacts. There's so many things in that culture. Because even if you look at the Chinese community, there's a lot of difference between the Cantonese food and the Hokkien food or the Hakka food. And the way, things like weddings. Weddings are very different between the Chinese, the Hokkiens and the Cantonese. And the way of life, how you bring up children, the vocabulary, the words you use, the values you impart is slightly different among the different dialect speakers. But I think it runs true in all the different dialect communities.
And are you seeing an interest in preserving dialects, particularly in urban areas?
I don't see that, but I do notice that some young people, a small group of young people, are very interested in Penang Hokkien. But Cantonese, like I said, it's not going to go away because you have movies, you have all these series in Cantonese, so it's not going to die off. But a lot of people are very concerned about the less spoken dialect like Fuchao, Hakka, Hainanese is going to go off, especially if the parents don't pass on this dialect to their children.
What does the future hold for our local dialects then?
I think if the parents and the educators don't do something about the dialects, it's definitely going to win. It won't die, but it will wane as the usage becomes lesser and lesser among the young people. And it's sad because when the young people don't actually revive these dialects among themselves, they lose out on their own identity and they don't even know the historical values of all these dialects that's happening, that should have been happening and occurring in their lives.
Dr. Kwang, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Kwang Ching Hei, who is a language consultant, talking to us about the importance of preserving dialects. And you can continue letting us know what dialect you speak and why is it important to you. You can call 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. And we've already been receiving some messages.
Yes, we have. So for example, Jimmy says, my wife is a Nyonya. I think the language is dying soon as there are fewer Baba Nyonya around. And I think I'm not a Nyonya myself, but I can understand that feeling, right? Because the thing about being a Nyonya person is also that, as we spoke about earlier, at least historically speaking, there's so much about that that is based on where you were from, where you lived, you know, your heritage. And I think once people start to move around and once you, I mean, even outside of demographics alone, when you have fewer people to speak the language with, that's what happens.
Yeah, one of the constant tips to learning a new language is being able to immerse yourself in the culture. And then because of economic necessities that you are maybe pushed to move into the city areas, more urban areas where there are more jobs available, and you're only expected really to speak maybe one to two and at most maybe three languages, and you don't have
three, you're applauded.
Three is like, yay. But when you again, like, you really don't have that community anymore. We see that in many minority communities, you know, who are economically forced to move out of their communities, moved out of their families. And I think now we also do actually have a caller on the line. Amir, good evening. What are your thoughts on this story?
Yeah, evening. I'd like to share my experience of unable to communicate with my in-laws as well as even to my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
I was born Indian, so my family spoke Tamil. But unfortunately, I grew up in an environment where there were a lot of Malays. So I end up speaking more Malay than Tamil. And then when I got married, my wife is Cantonese. So I end up not being able to grasp the Cantonese dialect. So I had another area that's also affecting me when I tried to communicate. Mm. So what I learned in this whole thing is that it comes down to me understanding as individuals. So, you know, the dialect can just be a language, but understanding their culture and the way they were and the way they speak. So that allows me to get along after 20 years of being married. So at the end of the day, it's just how they all treat each other.
Are you looking to learning Kelantanese or either of those dialects that you've mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand, but when I try to speak, it sounds funny. So it's like an Indian talking Kelantanese, so it sounds a bit funny. So I end up just trying to understand and, you know, get along with it.
Ami, thanks so much for your call. Yeah, I think the great thing is that it's really never too late to pick up a language. And really, we're using the words language and dialect interchangeably because even among linguists themselves, they struggle to differentiate the two. But yeah, it's great to hear that he's picking it up. And
No, and I think the sincerity of that attempt to relate to one's family is so crucial. I mean, I grew up speaking English. My parents spoke Cantonese to each other, but they were both, one was Hokkien, one was Hakka. So it's just a lot of languages going on. But I grew up primarily, they spoke to me in English, I spoke to them in English. And when my grandmother passed on when I was 13, but in the 13 years that I had her around, that was the time when my Cantonese was at its best because I really wanted to be able to communicate with my grandmother, who I love so dearly. But looking back now, I see so many gaps in terms of her ability to tell me things, my ability to tell her things, and I guess complicated-ish things, meaning the stories that she might have wanted to talk to me about, my feelings, that there were certain things that I think the language barrier made it difficult to transcend. And so when I hear stories like Ame, I remember that feeling of wanting so badly to relate to somebody that I loved very much. And I'm really so happy to hear that Ame is trying so hard, right, to relate to his elders.
Yeah, same in my case with my great-grand-uncle. We loved each other's company. The only problem was we couldn't speak to each other because I think he had spoken, I think, Hainanese. And my family is really like a jelly bean bag of Chinese dialects. So we had Teochew, Hokkien, Hakka, all those things. So the only ones I was able to maybe pick up was between Mandarin and Cantonese. We also have this next message from Ritza.
My dialect is Melayu Utara. Okay, I'm going to give this a shot. If I don't get it right, Ritza, you can come back and scold me. Hang nak pi mana? Jom kita pi minum ayak. I still use it here in KL when talking with friends. It sounds unique and quite funny. I also use the Bahasa Melayu Utara at home. I still speak standard BMN English with my kids at home. And I love that, firstly, because I like the idea of something being funny. Because when I hear my dad speaking in Hakka to his siblings, they laugh so much. And I think it's because there are certain phrases or certain jokes that just make more sense in certain dialects. Yeah. And I think that is another big thing, right? Like earlier we spoke about feelings, but what about humor? It's so sad when jokes don't translate.
Yeah, especially if you're at a family gathering or something, they're laughing, but you don't quite catch it. And that's usually even in a lot of the content that we see, right? In the movies and the shows, we kind of miss out on a lot of the nuances that sometimes even if you're reading a particular translation, we don't quite get because it's unique specifically to an accent, to a dialect, or to a language.
Meanwhile, Aziz from Bukit Jalil says, dialect plays an important role in Arabic. There are 22 countries with different dialects, all of which play a huge role. And I think that's a good example because we've been talking quite specifically about local languages. Mm. It's good to know how it works elsewhere.
Yeah, and just looking at how the other countries may also be attempting to preserve that, right? Despite their sometimes actually, again, not having no practical value.
Mm. Chia Wei says, Hokkien with my family, although we are Hainanese. My family's from the north, Kedah, Penang. Cantonese with my friends in the Klang Valley. Manglish, not quite English, also with friends. Bahasa Sarawak with husband's friends. Still speak a bit of Tamil. Grew up in a plantation. This is Malaysia.
Ooh, that's so many languages.
Yeah, and I think that, going back to what we were saying earlier about geography, that's it right there. You know, it really depends where you come from, mm-hmm. where you've lived, where you grew up, and that determines, you know, what languages you grew up speaking because it determines who was around you at that point in time.
It's also the power of it, right? Like immediately being able to relate to someone because, or them being able to relate to you directly because, you know, you just speak the same language that they do. And actually, we do have Ritza back to say, congrats, Lynn, that was a good attempt.
I think you're being very kind, Ritza. But I'll take it.
So we have more messages, but we do have to head to the news. You can tell us again what dialect you speak, why is it important to you. Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.